Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go with day two of this brand new late March week. I guess this will be actually the, I don't know, let me see, 21, thank you. No, this is the next to last week of the month of March. We've got one more full week of March. I think March ends on March 31st as a Friday. Yeah, maybe, who knows. me ciphering bad, right? Yeah. This is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that part out of the way. And if you would like to be part of the ongoing multimedia madcap, real-time, zany, wacky extravaganza that is the horn chat room, well, just head on over to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. And, you know, try is all we can do, right? Try to be civil. It's really icky for people when nasty drunk people wander into the chat room and have to be dealt with. It's just not much fun. And mostly that's not a problem. So come on in, be part of the conversation. And just like it says at sign in, you know, manners always. We can disagree without being disagreeable. Or, you know, 99.9% of us can. This is also, I might add, a listener-supported conversation. We rely on listener contributions in order to keep the bills paid, to keep the program going. And so far, while we're still saving up those rounded-up half pennies for the Gulfstream 5, or is it a 7 now? I don't know. We've managed to keep this going on a shoestring, the last frayed thread in a shoestring sometimes. Good God, 15 years. No. 13 years. Sorry. Ciphering. What did I? Yeah. And you're why? So we pulled up right short. We had just a couple of subscribers yesterday. We pulled up short, and so we find ourselves with no one responded to Tracy's challenge. And so that means that we've got $340 to raise this evening. Yeah, one at 340. Two at 170, four at 85, eight at 4250, yeah, 16 at 21 and a quarter. And beyond that, my head begins to hurt. So if you'd like to be part of keeping this on the air, I heartily encourage you to go over to headonradionetwork.com and click on Contribute. If you would like to become a subscriber and just set it and forget it, then you would do well to click that little box that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, fill out the rest of the stuff, it's easy, and get to the next screen, and that's all PayPal stuff. And so bear in mind, of course, no one charges anything here. We give this program away for free to anyone who wants to listen to it. The 24/7 stream, as long as Frontier can manage to keep the packets passing, the 24/7 stream is free. The podcast is free. The Podbean is free. And, of course, the live program, the chat room, it's all free. Friday on the Front Porch, free. And it's an effort to create progressive media that is not reliant upon seemingly interminable hustles for buying gold or steel buildings or wood floors sourced from some tropical paradise in which the people there are treated as, well, expendable. Who knows? Yeah. We need to raise $340 this evening. The mailing address, as ever, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, 318 Beckley, BECKLEY, WV, 25801. Let me know if you're going to do that, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne, and he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck. Okay. And just carry his industrial strength can of pepper spray with him in case he runs into a member of the Klan. You got to have the industrial strength heavy stream pepper spray to get through the goddamn hood. But that's how it goes. They use the hood to cover up all their economic anxiety. Right. 7 minutes past the hour, and a couple of notes coming in at the beginning of the program. David from San Francisco pointing out, here's the reference Tracy was trying to remember on Monday night's episode. It's from Star Trek's The Savage Curtain, when the Abraham Lincoln character meets Uhura on the bridge. Uhura. Mr. Scott? Lincoln. What a charming negress. Oh, forgive me, my dear. I know in my time some use that term as a description of property. Uhura. But why should I object to that term, sir? You see, in our century, we've learned not to fear words. Kirk, may I present our communications officer, Lieutenant Uhura? Lincoln, the foolishness of my century had me apologizing where no offense was given. Yeah, that was the one, and a couple other folks wrote in, so there we are, barely into the program this evening with our first official Star Trek reference. Yes, the word negress does appear in Star Trek, in The Savage Curtain. And, of course, Spock gets to meet his favorite hero, Vulcan, and one of the bad guys is Genghis Khan. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And somewhere along the way, we got the obligatory Kirk gets into a fight music, which is seared into my brain along just the same way that that the industrial theme is in Warner Brothers. Yeah. Batten down the hatches, Steve from Georgistan. Steve tells me they're calling for golf ball sized hail and strong storms this evening there in the North Georgia mountains where he and Miss Karen and little Cletus and Twiggy all reside. Cletus and Twiggy are good puppies. Yes, they're very, very good puppies. Yes, they are. Stay safe, Steve. Stay safe. Note coming from Jack in Shreveport. Subject line, C-SPAN Washington Journal, Todd. We hear Todd talk about Washington Journal and how totally scary brain dead some of the callers are. Well, I listened to the first 10 or 15 minutes of it this morning. I think the topic was the Trump-Russia thing, but what the topic was really didn't matter. Holy crap! The first caller, a woman, managed to go quickly off topic and proceeded to complain about women not keeping their legs or knees together. A couple of calls later, some guy started babbling about the investigations into the Russia thing being a waste of time and that Trump is the best president ever. How that guy could make that claim only 50 days or so into Trump's presidency, I got no idea. It's just a couple of examples of idiot callers from this morning, and it's like that almost every day. I just wrote you to vouch for how true Todd's frustrations with how scary stupid many Americans are. Are. Yep, I think your grammatic got me beat on the grammar, Jack. Jack closes simply saying, "Son of a bitch!" And meanwhile, if he's tuned in this evening, somewhere down in the wilds of South Carolina, Stan, Todd is probably saying, "Damn, yeah, I heard that too, Jack. Why can't these filthy trollops keep their legs together like proper ladies, with an aspirin between their knees?" yeah, I know. Note coming in from Scott and his political officer, Punky the Cockatiel. Trump has reportedly told GOP House members to either support his health care bill or face defeat in 18. Given his current troubles with his Obama wiretapping claim and the ongoing inquiry as to his and or his aides' dealings with Russia Putin, do you think he'll have coattails enough to impact GOP House election outcomes in 18? Hey, you know, that's the problem, Scott, that we are not in anything that could be remotely referred to as normal. We are in Abbey. Abbey who? Abbey normal? Yes. Will Trump have coattails? It's more of a question of, you know, will he go out? Will he? No, it's not even will he go out. I don't know if you saw the story or not, but Ivanka Trump, designer of crappy shoes made in Chinese sweatshops, probably by kids chained to tables and making less than a dollar a day or some such. Ivanka Trump is getting her own, no kidding, security clearance and West Wing office in the White House. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at first blush, you go, "Well, Jesus Christ, why in the hell would she?" But then you realize that this may be an attempt by saner forces inside the White House to keep her closer to her daddy so that we've got a fighting chance of the next time he stumbles into the bathroom at 6 o'clock in the morning having snuck away with his crappy old Samsung Galaxy S3 phone to do a little twooping, that maybe Ivanka can prevent World War III. These ain't normal times. And so the question about, you know, will he have coattails, Scott? I don't know. But what he does have is a Twitter account. And he loves him some Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so what I can, rather than expend the energy to, say, go down to Kentucky and campaign for some primary candidate against, I don't know, Rand Paul, is he up? I'm just hypothesizing right now. He'll just sit there in the morning on the commander-in-chief throne, twooping. And he'll twoop about what a traitor Congressman X is because he didn't support killing 10 or 15 million American citizens with this godforsaken healthcare disaster. Or he'll go on a twooping rampage, which, knowing what twooping means, is kind of a gross image to have sort of pottying around in your brain. He'll go on a twooping rampage against, Senator Shit for Brains from Utah for not supporting his effort to completely screw people out of healthcare. Who's the ultimate beneficiary? Well, this is part of a deal between him and Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan. They're in some sort of, and Paul Ryan, who allegedly, I mean, well, you know, if you take him at his word at your own peril, Paul Ryan, who evinced no great love for Donald Trump, but has now decided that Donald Trump is good for Paul Ryan, as long as Paul Ryan can get everything that he's been yearning for ever since he was standing around a keg at some crappy little college in Wisconsin. Okay? Just sitting there, knocking back the cold, those cold natural light foamers. You know, when I think of drinking something like Budweiser or Natural Light in a state like Wisconsin, I can only wish that there was a deity who would liberally pass out the lightning bolts. I got a story earlier today. I think it came from one of our Michaels about a University of Alabama student, 19 years old, who was busted down in Okaloosa County, Florida, with 7 30-pack cases of Natural Light and a bag of some doobie in the center console of his car and a fake ID so it said he was 24-year-old. No, it wasn't Michael. It was Mark. Mark. Thanks, Mark. And I guess it's kind of a ha-ha thing, but 19 years old, 7 30-pack cases of Natural Light, Anheuser-Busch Natural Light, and an unspecified quantity of doobage in the center console. And I just can't help think, and I mentioned the same to Mark, what are we teaching the children? Natural Light? He was on his way to spring break in Destin, which is a lovely place to go spring breaking, I must admit. But Natural Light? And so it is that I stand by my previous prediction. Everybody's hollering, oh, Tryon cares, dead on arrival, blah, 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 blah. Not so fast, okay? They will... look. They are determined... double-digit numbers of Americans. And with determination like that, you may rest assured that they're not just going to back away from it for the hell of it. Or because the sledding gets a little tough. By God, they're Republicans, not Democrats. They don't cut and run the first time somebody says boo to them. So, you know, what? Did Trump sit in that meeting and say, nice campaign you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it. I mean, that would kind of fit the scenario, wouldn't it? Yeah. Okay, Brother Deacon Asa says, I disagree with your assertion about Ivanka's reason for moving into the White House. I think the orange anus is fitting for his heirs to take over the throne once he kicks the proverbial bucket. Well, there's going to have to be a lot of constitutional fixer-uppering before that can happen. We don't have primogeniture or hereditary presidencies. You know, despite the Jill can win crowds hollering, "Ooh, Jesus, Clinton dynasty!" Yeah, no, we really don't. Michael in Madison, twooping, is that when he takes a twump? That's precisely when he takes a twump. That's tweeting while, you know, pooping. Which makes more sense than I care to admit. So, I mean, that's a start. Oh, okay. We're getting a little bit of a rationale for drinking Anheuser-Busch Natural Light, courtesy of Clarity. Clarity says Natural Light is a beer low on taste and available in every bar, so you never get turned down. Bud now has rivals. Well, it's not really a rival, though, because Anheuser-Busch makes Bud, Bud Light, Natural Light, Michelob Ultra, all kinds of beers with absolutely no flavor whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help noticing the Budweiser ads during the March Madness games. Budweiser has not changed its recipe for 140 years. Really? Let's see, 17... It's going to leave 23. That's going to be 1977. 1877. In 1877, apparently, they came up with a recipe for beer that was made almost entirely of rice, very little barley, and one single lonely hop flower three miles away in a warehouse. I find it difficult to believe that in the pre-Prohibition era, beer was as terrible as Budweiser is. But that's me. Call me crazy. The beer snobbery is on for the evening. Haley out in Arkansas says, Natural Light? I mean, there's faux beer and horse piss, and Natural Light is the latter. What do you think they keep those damn Clydesdales for? Right? I called it hypothesizing earlier. Stephen, New York reminds me the technical term is spitballing. What a delightful term. I don't know how you spent the early part of your day, but I spent a sizable hunk of mine watching the Neil Gorsuch show from the Senate Judiciary Committee chambers in the Hart Senate Office Building in Washington, D.C. And my, oh my, what an entertainment delight that was. First, you had creaky, crotchety old Chuck Grassley from Iowa, who eats food off of other people's plates, as Carol Baker can attest, again, if need be. And he introduced newspaper stories from Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal into the record to show what a fine, upstanding, wonderful Solon of a nominee, Neil Gorsuch is. A little bit after that, Dianne Feinstein, of all people, made poor Neil kind of uncomfortable when she pointed out the fact that she had an email in front of her that he was involved in, you know, wrote, that showed that he was a Bush administration supporter of waterboarding. You know, torture. And all the poor silver-tongued devil could say was, "Well, I don't have the email in front of me." To which Dianne Feinstein, and look, this is not the Dianne Feinstein fan club hour. So for Christ's sake, save me the snarky emails. Dianne Feinstein, goddamn! Just save it. Everybody doesn't do perfect all the time, and sometimes even a blind hog finds an acorn, okay? But she said, "Oh, I've got you an extra copy of the email, would you?" Yes. Oh, Rusty, do take it over to him. Which Rusty did, and then Neil Gorsuch didn't read it. I mean, he really studiously didn't read it. And then, because I'm a nerd, I also paid attention to the fact that he was taking his notes in pencil. He would sit there and write while he was being questioned. When at other times he would reel off lists of case names that were obviously printed right in front of him. But he was taking notes in pencil. And I couldn't help wondering if that was so that all of his notes could be erased, just in case anybody ever wanted to see what it was that he was noodling and doodling there during the committee hearing. Was he repeatedly writing, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy"? Was he writing variations on purity of essence, peace on earth? No way of knowing. But he did say that people in the vice president's office back during the Reign of Error were a little more hardcore on torture than he was, and that he would have put himself in the softer camp. Yes. He believes in a softer waterboarding, a softer torture. I guess that means he would use, what, a silk hanky instead of a cotton bandana for purposes of waterboarding? Who knows? Then along came mealy-mouthed old Orrin Hatch, who's just, I mean, he just believes that everybody needs to be friends, and of course the Republicans always act in the best interest, and it's almost as though Anita Hill never existed. And to hear him tell it, Neil Gorsuch, if you put a pound of cruelty-free, non-GMO, free-range Wisconsin butter in Neil Gorsuch's mouth, it would melt. I mean, it was getting really sickening. After a while, I began to wonder if the next question was going to be, Judge Gorsuch, tell us about that time that you accepted a bag of hickory nuts to work on Mr. Cunningham's entailment. Or Judge Gorsuch, tell us about that time you defended Tom Robinson against Bob Ewell's lynch mob. I mean, it was icky. And then right before the lunch break, it was Linz's turn.
And Lindsay had done worked himself up into a state of high dudgeon. Mercy sakes, he was up and off of the fainting couch and pacing around the drawing room as if he was in the drawing room there at the old family estate of Smoldering Chode. And he had his julep in his hand, and he could not believe the cruel vicissitudes to which Neil Gorsuch had been subjected, and reminded us all, mercy sakes, he did, he reminded us all of how he had voted for Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor. Yes, he did, because he believes that elections have consequences, mercy sakes. Fiddle-dee-dee. And then he said, and I am certain I would have voted for Judge Garland had we had such a vote. And I thought, oh my goodness gracious, they're going to have palpitations over to the Heritage Foundation and probably have to get out the smelling salts if they don't get kilt, plum kilt by the fantods beforehand. Yes.
Of course, there's only one problem with that whole goodness me sakes alive, I sure enough would have voted for that fine upstanding Judge Garland argument, and that is that at no point in time when Merrick Garland's nomination was before the Senate, at no point in time did Lindsey Graham stand up and say, Mitch McConnell, you old brute, you give that there Merrick Garland a hearing. You hear me now? I don't want to have you taken out back to the woodshed. You nasty thang. You give that fine man a hearing. You hear me? Because I want to vote for him. I want to vote for him real bad. You understand? Now, Lindsey didn't do that, because Lindsey has all the courage of a chihuahua in a lightning storm. And boom, right there under the fainting couch, even as Lindsey is passing out on it. Pepe, I certainly do hope it ain't no tornado coming for us. Yeah, right. But Lindsey had a witness before him, and after he got done pontificating for a while, Lindsey decided to ask a few questions of Judge Gorsuch. And Lindsey, who has probably never ever in his entire borned life participated in that activity which can result in the creation of a child, Lindsey started to telling Neil Gorsuch about how much he worries about fetal pain and how he done introduced in the Senate a fetal pain bill to save the little fetuses from feeling pain at 20 weeks because, well, goodness me. We know, of course, science doesn't know. It is unproven, it is undocumented, it is crap. The fetuses feel pain, don't you know? I mean, that's why we ask fetal surgeons to use anesthesia on the fetuses when they perform fetuses surgery. It was a giant load of the stuff that you bring in, you know, industrial manure spreaders. But this opened the door for him to say, and oh, it was a butch moment. Oh, it was butch. It opened the door for him to say to Neil Gorsuch,
Had you ever met Donald Trump before, Judge?
Why, goodness me, mercy sakes, no, Senator Graham, I had not until I was invited to the White House.
Had you not? Well, did Donald Trump ask you to vote to overturn Roe versus Wade?
Why, no, Senator, he said with lightning flashing from his eyes. He did not. And, Senator, I can tell you here and now that if he had, I would have turned around and walked out the door, just as I would do here, bitch. No, I didn't say bitch. But at that point in time, I thought I saw a little bit of a rosy flush rise into the cheeks of Lindsey Graham. If it had a fan, he would have been fanning himself. But it was terribly, terribly butch. And then Lindsey got to have his own butch moment. Oh, yes. Lindsey read a quote from that evil temptress, that demon in a blue dress. No, not Hillary Clinton.
The devil!
But a demon subaltern by the name of Nancy Pelosi, in which Nancy Pelosi wrote, "If you eat food, breathe air, work for a living, etc., 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 drink water, you need to be worried about Neil Gorsuch." At which point Lindsey said, "I consider that an absolutely scurrilous attack upon your character, and it is just another example of the pure politics that gets played in this here Congress, Judge." And I thought he was going to cry. But then he went on and he said, "It is a disgusting display of how far this body has sunken." And I mean, proceeded to just beat the living tar out of Nancy Pelosi, who, of course, was conveniently not even in the room, let alone the building, or for that matter, that side of the Capitol. But golly Moses, that's one tough man, that Lindsey Graham. I'm sure that even as we speak, John McCain is stroking Lindsey's thinning hair and telling him how absolutely magnificent he was today. Why, it was just as if you were right there on the battlefield and the bullets are flying. Here, sniff this, Lindsey. Yes, you're coming back to consciousness now? Good, good. I'll have the help bring round another julep. But the best part of the Gorsuch hearing, by far, and I was waiting for it, and really, it's to the point where you can pretty much say that it's the best part of any hearing in which he sits on the committee, was the examination of Neil Gorsuch by Al Franken, senator from Massachusetts, who, interestingly, while he holds a degree from Harvard University, college, whatever, does not hold a law degree. Oh, there was some banter back and forth between Patrick Leahy and Neil Gorsuch in which Patrick Leahy said, "No, I'm just a poor country lawyer." And Neil Gorsuch said, "Oh, now I've heard that a few times, Senator. Usually when an opponent would say that to me, I would reach for my wallet because I was about to get cleaned out. And I may have used that a couple of times myself." Bear in mind, this son of a bitch went to Columbia,
was educated at some Jesuit institution, high school, went to Columbia University, went on to Harvard, and then went to Oxford. And anybody, anywhere, anytime, ever believed him when he said that he was just a simple country lawyer? Yeah, I don't think so. And earlier in the day, mind you, I can't remember if it was the Hatch Love Fest, the Grassley Love Fest, the Graham Love Fest, but at some point in time, Gorsuch talked about his early career, back before he got a job sucking for life at the federal teat. And was out there lawyering, and by way of proving that he wasn't just a shill for giant corporations, why, he once represented the owner of a gravel pit against a man who had sold the gravel pit to the gravel pit owner, his client, and then wouldn't leave and took all the gravel. And he said, we found an old statute that said, You got damages coming to you if you steal stuff in a mine from somebody you sold the mine to. And he said, an old lawyer came up to me and said, son, you're a veritable Perry Mason. And apparently that's, while Gorsuch could not for the life of him remember writing about how he thought John McCain's amendment to the torture bill could be used as a justification for torture instead of a condemnation of it, he remembered the Perry Mason story, which is a fascinating act of mental legerdemain. Yeah. So there he sat. The young Perry Mason, waiting to have his softball confirmation in a seat that should never have even been able to be offered to him because the Senate abdicated its own duties with regard to Merrick Garland. And it was uncomfortable. Oh, guys, no offense, but stand by for a second. I got to take this call from Agnes. She just went off to the ER with our daughter who was having horrible belly pain. So I'll be back in a couple of minutes. I just need to get this. Stand by. Thanks. Okay, sorry about that. Thanks for your patience. Just kind of got it. You know, it's a call you got to take. But where were we? Oh yeah. Catching up with, or sort of running down, whatever, the Gorsuch hearing today. Now, bear in mind, and this is just a little thought experiment. Bear in mind, this is all taking place against the backdrop of the fact that the President of the United States and his minions and his campaign are under investigation for improper contacts with any number of Russian state and non-state actors. Right? Yeah, that's the way I understand it. So, one could argue that a prudent Congress, a prudent Senate, would not act in any particular haste in dealing with the Gorsuch nomination, simply because if it turns out that Trump is, in fact, a wholly owned subsidiary of Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, cuddly little snuggly little Putin bear, then everything he's done becomes suspect. It's sort of like the legal doctrine of the fruit of the poisonous tree. If the poisonous tree is fruit, if the tree is poisonous, it will transfer its poison to the fruit, and therefore everything is corrupted. Right? Meaning even the nomination of Neil Gorsuch, who is, of course, Donald Trump doesn't have the mind to go out and wonder, you know, who would make for a good Supreme Court justice. These are, this is a nomination that comes straight from the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, ALEC. Because those are the people who pull the strings in the Republican Party. Because the last thing a Republican legislator ever wants to do is actually work. So, naturally, what's the damn hurry? We got along for 11 months without a ninth justice who was legally and properly both vetted and appointed. Why are we all on fire now to get this dodgy right-wing tool onto the court? Well, I think I just answered my own question. Because dodgy right-wing tool. It's about the size of it, isn't it? And we would probably do well to recognize where we are and exactly how much power we have in this here handbasket. As Leonard Cohen once wrote, this is the road to hell. Because as I sat there watching Gorsuch, soft soap and and sandbag and poor mouth. And well, I couldn't tell you what I thought about Marbury versus Madison. That might be a case that comes before the court, and no good judge would ever prejudge a case. Yeah, that was another boner when he said, of course I like Marbury versus Madison. I can't imagine anybody who thinks that it isn't settled law. And I'm thinking, your masters over at the Heritage Foundation are going to be real upset at that, because they hate them some Marbury versus Madison. We've talked about the number of right-wingers who have invaded against the holding in Marbury versus Madison that the Supreme Court is and shall be the final arbiter of what is and is not constitutional in the United States. You know, because otherwise the Supreme Court doesn't have much of a job. Window dressing at best. I mean, we heard it during the campaign. We heard it from presidential candidate, Governor, Brother Deacon, Minister, Pastor Mike Huckabee, bullshit diabetes cure salesman. Yeah. We've heard it. And we heard, interestingly, we heard, I can't remember if it was Hatch or Grassley, but they reeled off a list of, the usual suspects, Brown versus Board of Education. How awful Plessy was. Stuff you learn about in your first constitutional law class in law school, and golly gee, those are certainly precedents. Maybe even super precedents, which appears to be a new term they've invented, or a newish term they've invented. You know what was interesting, though? When the attempt was made to get Gorsuch to admit that Roe v. Wade was a super precedent, well, we were back to not wanting to prejudge any cases again. I mean, he was a veritable Solon, a bubbling fount of conversational jurisprudence anytime a Republican was questioning him, and then he clammed right up the minute he saw somebody with a D behind their name, because, you know, they were just out to get him. They're definitely out to get him, because he fooled him with the strawberries. And so it was that the afternoon went on until it was Al Franken's turn to question Gorsuch. And what a show that was. Because all of a sudden, Atticus Finch turned into Sergeant Schultz. I know nothing. I remember nothing. I heard nothing. I say nothing. But that game doesn't work with Al Franken. Right? Because Al Franken, although not a lawyer, is without a doubt the most fearsome cross-examiner on that panel. And so, after talking about this case and that case and the other case that Gorsuch had been involved in, why, I've been involved in 2,700 cases, and 70% of the time I agree with the majority. We came around because, Senator, you must understand, I can't be deemed for the little guy and against big business, because the only thing I can be is a fair judge. It's a tough system we've got out here, and you know, 100% of the time you're going to make half the people unhappy because somebody has to lose. Now, never mind the fact that most of the time when somebody has to lose, that somebody is somebody who doesn't have umpty bajillion dollars at hand for highfalutin lawyers and the like, but somebody has to lose. So the case in question is called Trans Am. It has to do with a man named Alphonse Madden. He was a truck driver for Trans Am. He was out on the road late at night in sub-zero weather, when his trailer locked up. So he pulled over to the side of the road, called the road service for Trans Am, and they said, "You just wait right there, buddy. We're on our way." And he sat there in sub-zero weather for 2 hours, even after he found out that the heater in his truck cab was busted and, you know, wouldn't heat. After those 2 hours, a phone call came through, and when he answered the phone, he realized that his entire torso had become numb, and he couldn't feel his feet. I might note that Al Franken is from Minnesota, and he knows a little bit about brutally cold winter weather. Apart from referring to the case by its name, Trans Am, it's also known as simply the Frozen Trucker case. Now, If I understand the outcome of the case correctly, the court got it right and found in favor of Mr. Madden, who had been unjustly terminated because, in order to preserve his own life, he had gone somewhere away from his truck to get warm. And by the way, this is an object lesson that tells us a little bit about the way that over-the-road truck drivers are treated. He unhooked his trailer, and he drove to a gas station. Like I said, the court got it right. But this was one of those times when Neil Gorsuch just didn't think that the world had quite shit on Mr. Madden enough, so he dropped trowel and lifted robe and proceeded to take another dump. A trucker was stranded on the side of the road late at night in cold weather, and his trailer brakes were stuck. He called his company for help, and someone there gave him two options. Yeah, someone. He could drag the trailer. Not an agent for the company! Yeah, that's the way you'd write legal fact patterns. And an agent for the company gave him two... No, someone there. You know, just some guy wandering by. Yeah, yeah, hello? Yeah, you broke down? Oh, that's too bad. It's cold outside. Yeah, well, you know, you could drag it, you could drag your trailer to where you're supposed to have it. You know, you could sit and wait for help to arrive, okay? Just some guy. Someone answered the phone. Not someone who was legally responsible as a representative of the employer. No, we don't write that way when we're a darling of the fucking Heritage Foundation. He called his company for help, and someone there gave him two options. He could drag the trailer carrying the company's goods to its destination, paren, an illegal and maybe sarcastically offered option. So, yet now he's putting himself in the shoes of the someone and deciding they were being smartasses? That's some top-flight jurisprudence, boys and girls. Or he could sit and wait for help to arrive. A legal, if unpleasant, option. The trucker chose none of the above, deciding instead to unhook the trailer and drive his truck off to a gas station. And he wrote that by way of saying that it was okay to fire a man for A, refusing to put the public at risk with an unsafe trailer, and B, taking affirmative steps to keep from dying. Man, I love me some compassionate conservatism, don't you? So that was the background when Senator Franken, who's just a genial, pleasant, kind, obviously decent kind of guy that you really don't want to try to bullshit, leaned in.
First, I want to talk about Trans Am trucking, because Senator Durbin brought it up and Senator Lee brought it up. And I want to just go through the facts real quickly, because I understand the reasoning behind your dissent, but I'm actually kind of puzzled by it as well. Okay, so Alphonse Madden's a truck driver. He's made a stop off the interstate at 11 p.m. He comes back on, or he's about to come back on, notices his brakes are frozen on his trailer. Okay, so he decides, I'm not going to go on. It's dangerous to go with frozen brakes onto the interstate, frozen brakes on my long trailer. He's in the cab, and he calls in for a repair. Gets the dispatcher. Dispatcher says, well, wait. Hang on there. We'll wait for it. Okay.
See what I mean? Notice how Al Franken refers to the guy on the phone as the dispatcher, who is obviously an agent of the employer Trans Am, whereas when Gorsuch refers to him, he is simply someone there. Yeah, maybe it was the night janitor. Maybe they didn't even have the authority. Maybe they didn't call for help at all. It's just someone there. Just one of the little people, that's all.
Okay, a couple hours goes by. The heater is not working in his cab. It's 14 below zero. 14 below zero. He calls in and he says, my feet, I can't feel them. I can't feel my feet. My torso, I'm beginning not to be able to feel my torso. And they say, hang on, wait for us. Okay, now he actually falls asleep. And at 1:18 a.m.,
By the way, while we're at it, that falling asleep part, that sometimes comes before one freezes to death. Not saying, just saying.
His cousin, I think, cousin calls him and wakes him up. And his cousin says that he is slurring his speech and he doesn't make much sense. Now, Mayo Clinic in Minnesota says that is hypothermia. And he had fallen asleep. If you fall asleep waiting under 14 below zero weather, you can freeze to death. You can die. He calls him back.
And see, let's be clear about something. If you're a goddamn Republican and we're talking about some, working stiff, it's okay if they die. Because you know what? There's another working stiff who wants that job. And, the dead hand of the free market moving through the economy, writing and having writ, moving on. Milton Friedman. I mean, Neil Gorsuch is a goddamn millionaire, okay? He didn't get to work in the Bush administration's torture department because of his, as previously noted, stirring work on the Cunningham entailment in exchange for a bag of goddamn hickory nuts. He's another brutal industrialist, capitalist, bloodthirsty killer. But they do it in a soft voice, and they sound so refined and so fucking educated when they do it. And you're supposed to just like it and accept it because, well, they're just so much better than we are. I don't have the temperament of Al Franken. Al Franken is doing genius work here. Gorsuch hasn't gotten to say a goddamn word yet. And it's going to be fun when he does start talking. I promise.
And the supervisor says, wait. You got to wait.
So right, because, you know, it's all that business about freezing to death and 14 degrees and can't feel my feet and can't feel my torso and slurring my speech. You know, that's just malingering. Because that's what workers do. They just malinger. They complain about little inconsequential things like having their feet freeze off. And then they don't want to work. And then they want you to pay workers' comp. And the next thing you know, you're losing 1/13,000th of a goddamn penny on the next quarterly share dividend. And where is America's economic engine then? How are we ever going to make America great again with deadbeats like Alphonse Madden? Okay, just tiny wager. And being as how we haven't raised any funds at all this evening and have $340 to go, I really don't have anything to wager with. Alphonse Madden. Anybody want to take the odds on this guy being black? Don't know. I absolutely do not know. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But we're talking about a Republican who said it's okay for somebody to freeze to death. I mean, wouldn't you bet that way? Just an inquiry.
He has a couple choices here. Wait or take the trailer out with the frozen brakes onto the interstate. Now, when those brakes are locked and you're pulling that load on a trailer with its brakes locked, you can go maybe, what, 10, 15 miles an hour? Now,
Senator,
what's that
I'm
like
not
on
a trucker.
An interstate? Say you're going 75 miles an hour. Someone's going 75 miles an hour. They come over a hill and slam into that trailer. Also, he's got hypothermia. He's a little woozy. Probably figures that's not too safe. I don't think you'd want to be on the road with him, would you, Judge?
Senator,
you would?
Or not?
It's a really easy yes or no. Would you like to be on the road with him?
Want to be on the road with him?
Yeah.
With the hitched trailer or the unhitched trailer, Senator?
Well, either, but especially with the hitched trailer. With the locked brakes?
No, I don't think that was a serious
option. Okay, I
thought
that was... I wouldn't want to be there either.
Yeah.
And so what he does is he unhitches it and goes...
Do you hear that? Is there anybody within the reach of my voice who would go, fuck no, I don't want to be on the same road with that guy? And you know what? It would have been perfectly okay if Gorsuch had said, well, hell no! But this guy has been so well coached, so thoroughly schooled, so absolutely woodshedded, that he can't even agree without being cornered that it might not be a good idea to to be on the road with someone who is in an obviously unsafe condition. Because, see, if he said, if he just straight up said, no, I don't want to be out on the road with him, then his dissent falls completely apart because he was more than happy. He said, in fact, that it was okay to fire Alphonse Madden for not getting back out on the road or not agreeing to freeze to death for the company. They dress mighty fine, but these people are beasts.
Off in the cab.
And then I believe he comes back 15 minutes later.
And he comes back after he gets warm so that he can be there when it gets repaired.
Right.
Okay. Gets fired. He gets fired.
Yeah, that was the thanks he got. He got fired. A firing with which Neil Gorsuch, if you can imagine it, agreed.
And the rest of the judges all go, that's ridiculous. He shouldn't, you can't fire a guy for doing that. It was, there were two safety issues here. One, the possibility of freezing to death or driving with that rig in a very, very, very dangerous way. Which would you have chosen? Which would you have done?
Ding, ding. Oh, by the way, ding, 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 ding. Nothing funny about it, but I'm giving myself a cowbell. Yes, Alphonse Madden, official black guy. Because it's okay to fire black guys who refuse to freeze to fucking death for the corporation. Can you fire the black guy for not freezing to death? Let me see here. Yeah, that's Chapter 62, Subsection 41, Section 3, Subparagraph A, little I. You can fire the black guy for not freezing to death. Yeah, fire him! Steve, in New York, a lawyer, caught the whole, well, Senator, are you talking about the unhitched trailer or the hitched trailer as to whether I'd want to be on the road? Steve said, hitch trailer? Unhitched trailer? Are you fucking kidding me? Bob, this guy is not humane, maybe not even human. He ain't a millionaire for his humanity. That ain't Mother Teresa, probably a bad example. That ain't Gandhi sitting there at the table being questioned. That is another goddamn godforsaken soldier in the right-wing war against the rights of working people. We clear, not yelling at you, Steve, you know that. Les got it right, too. Of course he's black. Mm-hmm. Well, of course that didn't have anything to do with it. No. Nothing. Nothing ever does. I mean, after all. After all, the Republicans sat there for 8 long years and let Barack Obama be 3/5 of a president. Yeah. Hey, thanks to Steve and Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. We now only have $320 to raise this evening, and that is a huge help. God, I hope we don't wind up at Friday on the front porch with a gigantic hole to fill in. Thank you. Thank you, Steve and Karen and Cletus and little Twiggy. Twiggy doesn't get the love she deserves. Twiggy's a very good girl. Twiggy's a very good puppy. Regarding this dissent by Gorsuch in Trans Am, Randy in PA points out, in conservative speak, that is called making your bones. And, you know, we've got over-the-road truck drivers in our little family community congregation. And I'll bet you any of them could call in and go, yep, can your ass in a minute. They don't care if you freeze to death. They're worried about what's in that truck because, you know, somebody could come and steal 500 cases of Wendy's hamburgers that are never frozen, except, you know, when they're frozen in the back of a frozen truck. Right. Anyway. Yeah, back to the clip. Because this really is good.
Blame at all for a moment for doing what he did do. I empathize.
Well, hold on a damn minute there, Judge. I want to get that again.
There are two safety issues here. One, the possibility of freezing to death or driving with that rig in a very, very very dangerous way. Which would you have chosen? Which would you have done, Judge?
Oh, Senator, I don't know what I would have done if I were in his shoes, and I don't.
Really? Really, Neil? You don't know what you would have done if you were in his shoes? You who loves life so much that you worry about the precious little fetuses? You don't know what you would have done? You wouldn't have done everything in your power to save the precious pasty hide of Neil goddamn Gorsuch? In that moment, we learn that the essential nature of Neil Gorsuch is to be just like the guy who nominated him for the seat on the Supreme Court, a liar. Oh, I don't know what I would have done. Bullshit. You would have fired up Johnny Paycheck on the MP3 player in your cab, queued up, take this job and shove it, and toddled off down the road. Because your life has value. Alphonse Madden's life. Well, Alphonse Madden was a black life that, to Neil Gorsuch, didn't matter. John says, I wonder if the judge was writing the right-to-work logic. No. Here in a minute, we'll find out the logic he was writing, and I'll provide you a spoiler. Al Franken takes that logic, rolls it up nice and tight, turns it broadside sideways, and crams it up Neil Gorsuch's ass, marking him for the bloodthirsty goddamn right-wing hypocrite that he is. Because when you would require a man to engage in a Hobson's choice between dragging an unsafe trailer or sitting there and freezing to death, well, that's pretty monstrous. Here we go. Oh, Senator, are you going to cry, Neil? Oh, Senator, I don't know what I would have done. Oh, Rhett, whatever shall I do?
Or driving with that rig in a very, very very dangerous way. Which would you have chosen? Which would you have done, Judge?
Oh, Senator, I don't know what I would have done if I were in his shoes, and I don't blame him at all for a moment for doing what he did do.
But it was okay to can his ass. The other judges said, no, it's clearly wrong to can his ass. And Gorsuch goes out of the goddamn way. He could have just signed on to the opinion and said, yep, Trans Am was wrong. Madden was right. And we wouldn't be engaging in this line of questioning. But because Neil Gorsuch is a creature of outfits like the Heritage Foundation, he had to write a dissenting opinion saying that Alphonse Madden needed to be fired, deserved to be fired, and was probably better off dead. Because in Republican world, as noted, if we can't contribute to their wealth, if we cannot contribute to their power, you, me, all of us are, in fact, better off dead.
I empathize with him entirely.
Okay, we've been talking about this case. You haven't decided what you would have done? You haven't thought about for a second what you would have done in
this
case?
I thought a lot about this case.
And what would you have done?
I totally empathize and understand.
I'm asking you a question. Please answer questions.
Senator, I don't know. I wasn't in the man's shoes. But
Oh, I don't know if you caught that or not. But if you were writing a screenplay, and this was taking place in a trial courtroom, all that hemming and hawing and shucking and jiving about, I don't know what I would have done. Eventually, the lawyer looks at the trial court judge and says, Your Honor, the witness is being evasive. Will you please direct the witness to answer the question? It's a yes or no question. It doesn't call for anything but yes or no. It's a simple question. And the judge leans over to the witness box and he says, the witness will answer the question. That's what just happened there. Franken has been drilling and drilling, twisting and twisting, putting the bit in a little deeper, a little deeper, a little deeper, letting Gorsuch tap dance and evade. And he finally says, will you please just answer the question? And in that moment, again, we know that the fundamental nature of Neil Gorsuch is that of, like his boss who nominated him, a liar.
I understand
you
why
you don't
he
know
did.
What you would have done. Okay, I tell you what I would have done. I would have done exactly what he did.
Yeah. I understand.
And I think everybody here would have done exactly what he did. And I think that's an easy answer. Frankly, I don't know why he had difficulty answering that. Okay, so you decide to write a thing in dissent. If you read your dissent, you don't say it was like sub-zero. You say it was cold out.
Yeah, that's true. It is absolutely true. I was cold outside. Cold temperatures. You know, cold outside is when you have to put on a hoodie over your Hawaiian luau shirt and your Bermuda shorts. Fourteen degrees below goddamn zero is a whole nother kettle of frozen fish.
The facts that you describe in your dissent are very minimal. But here's the law that, and you go to the language of the law, and you talk about that. I go to the law. A person may not discharge an employee who refuses to operate a vehicle because the employee has reasonable apprehension of serious injury to the employee or the public because of the vehicle's hazardous safety or security condition. That's the law. And you decided that they had the right to fire him, even though this law says you may not discharge an employee who refuses to operate a vehicle, because he did operate the vehicle. Is that right? That's how you decided, right?
That's the gist of it.
Yeah, that's the gist of it. He can't even say yes. That's the gist of it. So because the guy unhitched his trailer and drove off to try not to freeze to death because his goddamn heater was busted, what did he want him to do? Climb in the engine compartment next to the engine block?
Well, that's the gist of it. See, this is a case of judicial activism. This is a case where there is an obvious right answer, but if you are a right-wing jurist, you will move heaven and earth to come to the conclusion that screws the worker. Because workers need screwing. It's how you keep them good and terrified, afraid, meek, and compliant. He had to look past the statute. He had to engage in unnecessary baby splitting. I mean, you're drilling down real deep if you get down to the place where you're willing to let a guy be fired for trying to save his own life. But then you go on the right-wing foundation speaking circuit and rake in $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a pop for speaking fees. Oh, Jesus, Hillary Clinton, Goldman Sachs, it's just like her. And you get paid for talking about how... Well, you don't get paid. You get an honorarium. For talking about how you will not tolerate judicial activism. And how you're a constitutional originalist. Because you were willing, ex post facto, to have a black man freeze to death at 14 below.
Well, no. Is that how you decided? That's what you decided.
Senator,
right?
There are a lot of more words and opinions, both in the majority by my colleagues and in dissent, but that I'm happy to agree with you. That's the gist of it.
Right. Well, that's what you've said. And I'm not a lawyer, but I've been on this committee for about 8 years, and I've paid some attention. So I know.
Now, see, that. I'm not a lawyer. I don't play one on TV. I'm just a humble Minnesotan who's been on this committee for 8 years. There was a sort of karmic justice in this moment. Because of the exchange with Pat Leahy earlier in which he said, Senator, I know you're no humble country lawyer. Reach for your wallet when somebody says that. And Al Franken brings it back around, rolls it up sideways, and everything that follows.
The opinions, both in the majority by my colleagues and in dissent, but that I'm happy to agree with you. That's the gist of it.
Right. Well, that's what you've said. And I'm not a lawyer, but I've been on this committee for about 8 years, and I've paid some attention. So I know that what you're talking about here is the plain meaning rule. Here's what the rule means. When the plain meaning of a statute is clear on its face, when its meaning is obvious, courts have no business looking beyond the meaning to the statute's purpose. And that's what you used, right?
That's what was argued to us by both sides, Senator.
But that's what you used.
Yep.
By the way, at this point in time, Gorsuch is drinking water like Marco Rubio in that one response speech. Yeah.
Both sides argued that the plain meaning supported their interpretation.
And you used it to come to your conclusion.
But
the plain meaning rule.
Notice how he can't take personal responsibility for his own goddamn dissent. Well, both sides used it. Yeah, but you used it too. You used it in your opinion. Well, because both sides. No, it doesn't wash. You don't get to hide behind that.
Because, again, he could have simply agreed with the people who got it right and said it was not okay to fire the black guy who didn't want to freeze to death.
Has an exception.
Uh-oh.
When using the plain meaning rule would create an absurd result, courts should depart from the plain meaning. It is absurd to say this company is in its rights to fire him because he made the choice of possibly dying from freezing to death or causing other people to die possibly by driving an unsafe vehicle. That's absurd. Now, I had a career in identifying absurdity. And I know it when I see it. And it makes me, you know, it makes me question your judgment.
And that is a burn that goes all the way to the bone in somebody who has made his career out of having other people tout what fabulous judgment he has. This is a guy who, in the final analysis, if he gets the opportunity, an opportunity that he's not even going to win on, if he gets the opportunity to fuck a worker, he will fuck the worker. Steve, another member of the fraternity of Steve, says, letter of the lawless. On the brighter side, soon as they start replacing truckers with those fancy automated robot drivers, no one will have to make these pretzel-twisted decisions balancing human life against the needs of commerce. Poor judge, though. Pulling the plug on a tin can just ain't got the kick of sacrificing the working-class parasites. Regards, Steve in China. Au contraire, mi amigo. It's just going to be a shift in jurisprudence. And they'll go from fucking the truck driver to fucking the little dude 600 miles away who's operating 6 or 7 or 12 or 14 trucks with 6 or 7 or 12 or 14 or 17 computer monitors in front of him when he glances away from one for a second or maybe has to go take a pee. We'll just move from freezing to death to not pissing yourself. What do you mean you don't want to piss yourself for the corporation? God damn it, son! That's what they make depends for. And that is what passes for jurisprudence on the bloodthirsty, soulless right wing in the United States. Now here's the bad news. He's going to get confirmed. He'll get his 60 votes. Shitweasel Joe Manchin will, sooner rather than later, issue a statement talking about what a fine, upstanding Christian man Neil Gorsuch is and how Donald Trump, no matter what we may think of him, has the right to name his own appointees to the Supreme Court. And all that, I'm just a humble judge who won't prejudge anything. He's got a list of shit that he's prejudged a mile damn long. Or else he wouldn't have risen as far into the wingnut atmosphere as he has to be able to get this nomination. But Joe Manchin will talk, he's a fine man, huh? And I'm going to vote for him, and I hope he gets 60 votes. I hope he gets 99 votes, because we've got to stand with unity here in America. We've got to have some balance. And Heidi Heitkamp will do the same thing. And, the usual. Because all they got to do is, you know, have nine. You think the Democratic caucus in the Senate is so strong that it can hold all of its members together to keep this bastard from getting 60 votes? Understanding at the same time that Mitch McConnell will be sitting there screaming, "We just want him to have an up or down vote. God damn." This man is going to be confirmed to the Supreme Court of the United States. And the minute his hand pulls off the Bible, the minute he zips that robe up, it's Katie bar the door for everything that progressives think is viable or worthwhile in the way of rights. Women will no longer have to worry about being grabbed by the pussy by Donald Trump. Because they'll have to grab their own to keep Neil fucking Gorsuch out of it. There was talk earlier today, 10 years ago he was almost unanimously confirmed by the Senate. Yeah, and then a couple of years after that he decided that the weirdo evangelicals at Hobby Lobby had more rights than a woman did to have an IUD. This guy's a judicial disaster who'll be on the court for 40 fucking years. And if Donald Trump were to be impeached tomorrow, if this guy gets confirmed, it will be enough of a disastrous legacy. But you know what? Give credit where credit's due. Be grateful that there's an Al Franken out there who can show these monstrosities up for what they are. Just try to reserve judgment and don't hoot about AIPAC or anything for a couple of minutes. Just pay attention to how damn smart Al Franken was. And it's not that just compared to the Republicans. He was smarter than Feinstein. He was more effective than Feinstein. He was smarter than Leahy. He was more effective than Leahy. He was sharper than anybody else on that committee. Now, we all know that Hillary Clinton ran a terrible, awful, very bad, no good, lousy campaign. It's just a thought experiment. I'm not suggesting anything. Can you imagine Al Franken debating Donald Trump? Donald Trump lives in quivering, water-boweled fear of the Saturday Night Live writing staff now, and they're not half of what it was in its golden age when Al Franken was there. Not saying, just saying. Just a little food for, you know, thought. So let's take a little break. I've filibobstered more than half of the program away. It's 19 minutes before the hour. I'm not kidding. We really need to raise the $320 so that we're not in a, 520 hole tomorrow, 720 hole Thursday, and a 920 hole on Friday. Now we're down to 295, thanks to Jack. Thank you so much, Jack. Thank you. Maybe we can take this down a little bit. Sure hope we can. Your calls are welcome. You know how to reach the program. The stress line works for some people. For some, it doesn't. Maybe it works for people who have the sufficient level of stress to live up to the name of the phone line. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN, the stress line. 304-574-8178 is the other number. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Email comes into BobKincaid@gmail.com. Bob Kincaid on Facebook, @BobKincaid on Twitter. Yeah, a pattern emerges. We'll be back. Thank you. Asa, I don't know what I would do without you. God damn it, Bob, there you go, shilling for Al Franken, you big old DNC mouthpiece, you. I would have been lost without that. I really would have. And courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa and courtesy of Ralphs, we have $65 of challenge on the table now. The next $65 that roll in get doubled, courtesy of Ralphs and Brother Deacon Asa. And so that would take us down, that'd take us down a long way. That'd take us down to about, you know, $125 to go, which would be huge. $65 in challenges on the table. And let's just deal with a little bit more email before the break. Subject line, not to mention, Stephen China says, needless to say, the judge would uphold firing the driver for operating an unsafe rig, especially in consideration of any liability incurred via the company's insurer. Can't have irresponsible, sleepy-headed, freezing drivers endangering the public. Hard to stay alive or keep your toes in this bitch, isn't it? It is. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Because had Alphonse Madden gotten himself into some horrible flaming conflagration, car wreck, dead people scattered all over the frozen tundra, 14 degrees below fucking zero, you can bet your ass that the army of insurance company lawyers for Trans Am Trucking would have been right there in court pleading, well, you know, Your Honor, we really don't have any liability here. We have clearly stated rules that you're not supposed to drive when you can't, when you're so frozen that your speech is slurring, you can't feel your torso, and your feet are numb. It's all on him. And of course, Neil Gorsuch, had it become an appeal situation, would have said, God damn right it is! Judgment against the black guy. Thank you so kindly, Charlene. We are now down to $35 to go to meet the challenges. Thank you, Charlene, very kindly. All right, being as how it is Tuesday, the 21st day of March, 2017, it is Green News Report night, so stick around. We'll be back. There's more filibobstering. And more conversation radio, if that's what you're into. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There was a face on a hoarding that someone had drawn on, and just enough time for the night to pass by without warning. Away in the distance, there's a blue flashing light. Someone's in trouble, somewhere tonight. As the flickering neon stands ready to fuse, the wind blows away all of yesterday's news. Well, they've locked up their daughters and they've battened the hatches. They always could find us, but they never could catch us. Through the grease-streaked window of an all-night cafe, we watch the arrested get taken away, and that cigarette haze is ecology beam as the horse and the drums file them from the street. Cut the strings in the boilers, the coke in the fire.
It's Tuesday, March 21, 2017.
As to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. We're not spending money on that anymore.
Trump's proposed budget cuts go deepest on climate change.
Flooding and mudslides caused by intense rains in Peru has now left at least 72 people dead.
Extreme rains trigger catastrophic deadly flooding in Peru. Trump's Supreme Court nominee blocked environmental lawsuits. Plus, Defense Secretary calls climate change a national security threat, at least in writing.
All of that writing on the wall straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The White House celebrated St. Patrick's Day by slashing green energy. If only there was a way to get the F-35 to run on coal, it would be a perfect budget.
No kidding. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, speaking of coal, Donald Trump said on Monday at a rally in Kentucky, quote, "As we speak, we are preparing new executive actions to save our coal industry and to save our wonderful coal miners from continuing to be put out of work. The miners are coming back," Trump told the rally in Louisville, Kentucky, without providing any details.
Of course he didn't, because coal jobs are not coming back.
Well, don't tell that to the new president.
Meanwhile, Senate confirmation hearings began this week for Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Neil Gorsuch of the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals. In the Trump era, environmental groups are hoping the legal system will help protect the environment and public health. But Mother Jones reports that Judge Gorsuch, throughout his career, routinely blocked environment-related cases from reaching the court at all, ruling that groups don't have standing to sue, for example. Gorsuch has also criticized a judicial tenet called the Chevron Doctrine, in which judges defer to agency experts, especially science experts, rather than their own opinions in their rulings.
No comment. It's a stolen Supreme Court seat.
The Trump administration's proposed budget plans to eliminate programs that poor Americans rely on, like one that helps low-income households weatherize their homes. Another helps Alaskan towns build water infrastructure as the permafrost melts underneath them. The budget also specifically targets federal climate change programs, like those that help developing countries adapt to climate impacts. Why? Well, here's Mick Mulvaney, director of the White House's Office of Management and Budget.
As to climate change, I think the president was fairly straightforward. We're not spending money on that anymore. We consider that to be a waste of your money to go out and do that. So that is a specific tie to his campaign.
Promises made, promises kept. Well done, Trump voters.
The administration's budget also kills the Department of Energy's innovative and popular Advanced Research Projects Agency, known as ARPA-E, which does advanced research on energy from biofuels to batteries. Despite the Trump administration's denial of climate science, Defense Secretary General James Mattis says that climate change is a threat to national security.
What?
At least in writing. In written testimony following his January confirmation hearing, Mattis explicitly called climate change a national security issue, a driver of, quote, instability that requires a whole-of-government response. In an interview with NPR, Brigadier General Gerald Galloway of the Center for Climate and Security explained why.
If our allies are having problems in their own country as a result of such things as drought, where there's instability in the country, instability breeds conflict, and conflict is what puts our forces at risk, and we don't want that to happen.
Yeah, I remember years ago reporting on Syria and the drought there, and look what happened, and you had folks on the right making fun of us just for reporting those facts.
Meanwhile, in Peru, at least 72 people have died and thousands are homeless after record rains triggered flooding and landslides in the coastal region that officials say washed away entire communities along with roads, bridges, and crops. Meteorologists blame an unusual, sudden, and abnormal warming of the Pacific waters off the coast of Peru, sort of like a localized El Nino that turbocharged the storms.
These abnormal things are becoming more and more normal each day, it seems.
Here in the U.S., the drastic swings between February's record heat and March's late season record snow have severely damaged crops in the Midwest and the Southeast, fooling plants and fruit trees that budded only to be killed by the surprise deep freeze. and cost hundreds of millions of dollars in economic losses to the agriculture industry. But finally, some good news. Despite Donald Trump's extensive criticism of wind turbines, the administration at least is allowing offshore wind farms to go forward. Last week, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management held an auction for offshore wind farm leases in federal waters off the coast of North Carolina, with plans to go ahead for a similar lease auction for the coasts of Massachusetts and New York.
How thoughtful of them. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes, some mighty winds are blowing across the land and across the sea. It's blowing peace and freedom. It's blowing you and me.
That would be your ironic bumper out, courtesy of Brad and Desi. 6 minutes before the hour. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Thomas for jumping in as well. We now have only $20 to go to finish off Ralph's and Ace's two challenges. Technically, Ralph's is finished, and we've got $20 to go to finish Ace's. So hopefully that will happen in short order. Again, thank you very kindly to Thomas for jumping in on that. And okay, we're coming right up on the top of the hour. A different sort of challenge. This doesn't require anybody to give any money. This is just a straight up challenge, courtesy of Sparky, who does this every now and then. It's the new caller bounty. And I promise I will pay close attention both to the stress line and the other line and the Skype line. Sparky wants to induce a new caller to jump into the conversation with a promise of $50 to help us knock out last night and tonight's fundraising. And the fact of the matter is, I know that there are... I know that there are people listening who have never called. I also know that I also know that among other things, sometimes people find it very difficult to do such a thing as this. It's a lot easier than you may think. But a lot of years ago, I guess, there was a survey done by like Toastmasters or Dale Carnegie or whatever the hell. And it was a list of things people fear most. Dying was number two. Speaking in public was number one. Well, this isn't speaking in public. This is just a conversation that a little community congregation is listening in on. So the offer's out there. The new caller challenge, courtesy of Sparky, who has man-caved, recently folded space to become Sparky again. And we'll see how that plays out. Other stuff. I realize that we spent a lot of time on Neil Gorsuch. He deserves it. Because he's going to be screwing America for a very long time. A very, very long time. And I didn't neglect the fact that it is Titanic Tuesday, because it is. I just felt the need to jump right into things without some of the shilly-shallying. But it is Titanic Tuesday. And there is Titanic wisdom out there. I mean, good God! If suggesting that it's okay to fire a black guy because he refused to freeze to death for the company isn't titanic right-wing intellect. I mean, goddamn, there's ICE involved. What do you want? That's about as titanic as you can get without having an actual early 20th century steamship involved. But there's other stuff, too. And yeah, we were not shocked, not amazed, not stunned to find out that a Republican Supreme Court nominee would go out of his way to say that it's okay to demand that a black guy freeze to death in service of the corporation. How about we go from freezing to boiling? I read this story. I was not okay. You will probably not be okay either. Because there are multiple levels of evil in this. Real evil. The story goes back to June the 23rd, 2012. The story comes from the Miami New Times. It is the story of, again, do I even need to say it, a black guy by the name of Darren Rainey. Among other things, Darren Rainey suffered from, as noted, he had a lifelong and incurable case of blackness. But he was also schizophrenic. And I guess I've kind of given away the gist, as Neil Gorsuch would call it, of the story, because I just used the past tense. Darren Rainey was. Darren Rainey's dead. Let's just deal with that up front, shall we? He was schizophrenic. He was doing time in the Miami-Dade Correctional Institution for cocaine possession, because here in the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, amen, under God, if you're schizophrenic and poor and black and you get busted with some cocaine, well, we're not going to ask any questions about how poor, how black, or how schizophrenic you are. We're going to throw your ass in the tank. That's a given. And because he was schizophrenic, and because he was in a general population lockup, and because at the Dade Correctional Institution, they don't give two shits what's wrong with your mind, you're just there to be punished. Well, Darren Rainey ran afoul of some prison guards. They didn't like something Darren Rainey did. The corrections officers who didn't like Darren Rainey did were John Fanfan, Cornelius Thompson, Ronald Clark, and Edwina Williams. And since they decided that they didn't like what he had done, the four guards who decided that they were also judge, jury, and executioner, threw Darren Rainey, schizophrenic, into the showers. Remember, this isn't some nightmare horror tale out of 80 years ago in the Third Reich. This is Merca. This is how you make Merca great again. Those four guards were working on making Merca great again all the way back in 2012. When they threw Darren Rainey, schizophrenic, into the shower, you know, they didn't do like you do giving the baby a bath. They didn't test the water temperature on the inside of the wrist to make sure it was safe. No. No. They threw, and I'm not kidding when I say it turns my stomach to discuss it. They threw this man into a shower where the water temperature had been turned up to 180 degrees. As the Miami New Times notes, hot enough to steep tea or cook ramen noodles. I remember back from my beer brewing days, when you got ready to bottle, you wanted to reheat your wort and hold it at about 180 degrees for a few minutes so that it would be pasteurized. And any microbes that were living in the beer would be killed. Well, guess what? Any Darren Rainey's held in that same temperature get killed, too. They kept him, the four prison guards did, in that shower until he began to scream, until he began to plead, to please be let out. Oh, please, in the name of Jesus, let me out. I ain't done nothing. When he screamed, please take me out. I can't take it anymore. And began to kick the shower door. The prison guards laughed and laughed. And they shouted, "Hey, Darren, is it hot enough for you?" And like I said, Darren Rainey was executed in that shower. When they finally turned the water off, 2 hours later, Darren Rainey was laying crumpled in a heap on the floor. And when they tried to remove him, a nurse who examined him said he had burns covering 90% of his body. The nurse said she tried to take his temperature, but he was so hot
The thermometer couldn't register how hot he was. They cooked him. They cooked him. They boiled him alive. At the mere touch of the thing that had once been Darren Rainey, his skin simply fell off. I'm sure somewhere out there in the TV channels there are all new episodes of all new horror stories. Fictional, made up, fantastic, macabre, terrifying. But this isn't fiction. This is real. Now, the other end of the story. There's really not a lot of dispute about the facts. Miami-Dade State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle, this past Friday in a news dump, declared that the four prison guards who boiled Darren Rainey alive will face no charges, will face no punishment, won't even face an administrative proceeding, will lose no pay. In the report released by State Attorney Catherine Fernandez Rundle's office, it reads, quote, "The shower was itself neither dangerous nor unsafe. The evidence does not show that Rainey's well-being was grossly disregarded by the correctional staff." How about that? How about that? Parboiling a man for 2 hours under 180-degree water from which there is no escape? Does not show that Rainey's well-being was grossly disregarded by the correctional staff. I guess that's the standard. His well-being needed to be grossly disregarded, not just casually and sadistically disregarded. You can almost imagine Neil Gorsuch writing the Supreme Court case if there had been criminal charges against the four judges. Remember how in Madden he wrote that the temperatures were cold? Darren Rainey was thrown into a warm shower. He was allowed to take a warm shower for 2 hours. And mysteriously, Darren Rainey up and died. It's the kind of jurisprudence you get from Republican judges. State's Attorney Rundle has been a top prosecutor in the 1990s, since the 1990s, following Janet Reno.
Janet Reno?
She's been in the office ever since. And not once, not never, no how, no way, has she charged a Miami police officer for an on-duty shooting. There's a lot of coverage of this story. The Miami Herald covered it. Julie K. Brown reporting. She interviewed multiple witnesses, jail inmates, staff members. And lo and behold, what did they say? They said that the showers were routinely used to scald any inmate who acted out or upset the guards. You know, gave the guards a sad, maybe by calling them dirty screws or something like that. There's a whistleblower in the case, Harriet Kraskowski. The New Yorker reported on it. When she blew the whistle, she was bullied, she was harassed, and she was forced into therapy. Because of reporting about the torment and abusive behavior at that jail. And yes, the New Yorker called what was done to Darren Rainey torture. And the medical examiner, in what may very well be a dodgy post-mortem, said that Rainey didn't have any burns on his body. On the other hand, the state's attorney's office did bother to make mention that one Miami-Dade County cop reported that nurses said that Rainey's body had red areas on it and that his skin was slipping off when he was removed from the shower. On the other hand, the memo there from the state's attorney's office said, well, you know, this could have been due to body decomposition rather than burns. Any science-y people out there? How long does it take your body to start decomposing so badly that your skin slips off? I mean, does that happen like 5 minutes after you die? After being 2 hours in a 180-degree shower? I mean, wait, we're confusing. Look, it's okay to boil a black guy alive in America. Let's just deal with that. Rainey did not sustain any obvious external injuries, and particularly, there were no thermal injuries of any kind on his body. That's from the report. That's why you use the shower instead of the truncheons, damn it. And then, of course, the Dade County authorities leaned on Rainey's family. And said, hey, you might want to hurry up and cremate him. I mean, he's kind of messy anyway. No, I mean, don't waste any time with a burial. I mean, we've autopsied him and everything. One autopsy's enough. Now, go ahead and stick him in the oven. He's already been in the shower. And all of the inmates who said that they heard Rainey screaming,
Well, the state's attorney's office said, well, I mean, they're in jail. They're convicted felons. Of course they're going to lie. They can't help but lie. And I mean, black. And then at the end of the report about the black man who was boiled alive in a 180-degree shower for 2 hours. State's Attorney Rundle said, accordingly and in conclusion, the facts and evidence in this case do not meet the required elements for the filing of any criminal charge. And then, as the report, as the account notes, then she signed her name. And sitting up in Washington are four judges. Well, three and a half. Three, four, depending on what day of the week it is, whether it ends, whether it's got an R in it. About to be increased by one, who would look at that case and say, well, if he didn't want to be boiled alive, he should never have done cocaine, and he shouldn't have caught the schizophrenia either. Cocaine probably made him schizophrenic. It's his fault. Real shame he's dead. Nah, it's not. One less of them. Meanwhile, let's travel northward. To a class on March the 9th at Howard University, a historically black university. Where a professor, whose name is not reported, was giving a lecture on Frederick Douglass. Oh, hell, you just know this isn't going to end well, don't you? According to a report at Caged Bird magazine, the person referred to as Professor A, during his lecture on Frederick Douglass, pointed to one of only two young black men in the class. He said, stand up. He said, you look healthy. Like the type of slave buyer, the type of man slave buyers would look for. It's Howard University, and you can just imagine the gasp that ran around the room. When he did it, a bunch of students in the class said, quit this! But he didn't. Interviewed by WUSA Channel 9 in D.C., Lena Willis said, I thought it was pretty crazy and wild, especially after seeing the reaction of the students, how he kept going and proceeding with the auction. Professor A asked me to stand up, and I reluctantly did so. He started propping my body up as if we were on a slave auction block. The professor reportedly asked the other students to examine their classmates' teeth, height, and weight. Then he instructed the student to turn around so we can see your buttocks. I wanted to hit him. I was being racially and sexually harassed in front of my peers, and the only thing I could think to defend myself was by punching him. Then the professor assigned a value of $400 to the student. Then he said, look, I'm uncomfortable too. I'm white.
this isn't... You don't have to... Look. You don't have to hold a fake slave auction to convince young college students of the evil of slavery. Well, okay, maybe you do at like Texas A&M or Mississippi or Alabama or Georgia or the University of South Carolina or God knows Clemson, whose campus is actually an old slave plantation. But I don't think you need this kind of example at, you know, Howard. Maybe I'm overestimating. But I'm guessing that students at Howard know damned well about the Middle Passage. And know damned well about the nightmare that was slavery. But, you know, Titanic Tuesday. What are you going to do? Jack in Shreveport, subject line, Miami case. Jack says, this case or event is one of those happenings in the United States that makes me question whether peaceful protest, as John Lewis advocates, is sufficient. My mind wanders to vengeance and retribution. Maybe that's the only way to get even the smallest amount of justice. At all. I understand why you wonder that way. I'm not sure if we've got somebody on the line or not. I'm being told by Skype that there's an internet connection problem. Let's find out. Hey, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, hi. Who have I got?
This is Alma.
Hi, Alma. How are you? I'm so glad to hear from you.
Well, thanks.
And you jumped in on the new caller challenge. Thank you so much.
I did, and it's nice to hear your voice. What you're describing is beyond what the soul can handle.
I think you're right. The only hope we have is to sort of diffuse it among ourselves. I don't report these things for the sensational value of them, but more to dispel any notion, because we're force fed it every day, Alma, about what a godly Christian nation we are.
And we aren't.
No.
You know, my father was a pastor, and he marched with Martin Luther King Jr. in Selma, Alabama. He was with the Presbyterian Church, and I grew up, I think I was probably about 10 years old at the time, and I grew up that everybody's equal, nobody's better than anybody else. And he got death threats. We had statuary out on the yard, and they would be beheaded. And we interacted a lot with the black churches in the community. Students were in our home, fellowship groups, and we did an exchange student program, and had a black gal from, it was either Mississippi or Alabama, come live with us for a year. And I just, so she was probably about this is when she would have been a senior. And my sister, who is gone now, is a senior. And I adored her because she was the one in the family that gave me the most love and acceptance. She's somewhere now, you know, in the South, and I can't imagine what her life is like. I was trying to call my brother-in-law and ask how I could reach her, because my sister had kept in contact with her. And then she died of cancer, and for some reason I just felt like I needed to reach out to her about a month ago. Yeah. You know, I really have a problem with religion.
Didn't stick?
Well, I don't know. It's strange, strange stuff. My father was raised Nazarene. And that's like, you know, you don't wear makeup, you don't wear jewelry. When he was in college, he couldn't even wear shorts for the basketball team. And he was like a psychological preacher, sociological preacher. He wasn't so much into this, you have to accept Jesus into your heart, and you're a sinner, and all this stuff. I was a little bit younger than my sisters. I have three older sisters. When the Jesus movement came through, and they had all these cafes, and it was a big deal. I didn't really understand what any of that was about, because my father left the Nazarene church to become a Presbyterian minister. And one thing he did with the Presbyterian church is he made them get off the fence, because they didn't want to get involved with the civil rights. And they just wanted to see how it played out. But he pushed and pushed for the humanity of it. And I admire him for that. However, he would say things to me that God had a sick sense of humor to make a world that like this that we live in. And that people that went to the altar were sick. There was something wrong with them. And my three older sisters pretty much have become evangelical Christians. And I just kind of float where I don't really belong in this family. My dad was a theologian. He was a philosopher, psychologist, sociologist. And so my brain gets up into that, why are we here? What is the purpose of being alive?
Well, you know, go ahead.
Well, I have a lot of anger with my next oldest sister, because in the 2008 election, she convinced my father to vote for McCain instead of Barack Obama. And I, you know, it's just like, what the hell? He worked his whole life for this. And I really like the sister, you know, but it's just like somewhere we went different. She was his caregiver. I'm the one that was the nursing home administrator during the time that my parents were taking care of my grandparents, because my grandmother had Alzheimer's.
Oh.
And Dad was the one that left the family, and so he was ostracized. And then I had an uncle that had got Alzheimer's, but he was the prodigal son, and he was with the Nazarene Church also. So I don't really have a relationship with my two living, you know, sisters that are left. I did have one with the one that died, because she had the decency to at least talk to me about institutionalizing my father when he got frontal lobe dementia, which is a behavior. Not Alzheimer's, it was an Alzheimer's. and they kind of got together, the three of them, to pretty much lock him up. They put him in a locked facility. And I knew what happened in those places. And she'd tell me these half-truths of what they were doing. And I just kind of smelled something sour in what it was about. I think one of your callers said that he had told his parent that he would take care of them. Well, my sister had signed a contract that she would take care of my father. And she abdicated on that and locked him up. And then I had to fight her on it to get him back home. Because in the nursing home, they weren't giving him any, you know, intellectual materials to stimulate his brain. Exercise to keep his body halfway strong. So I would work over the phone with this geriatric doctor and interfere with their meetings with this person and bring up these questions. Are you sending him? Are you providing him anything that will keep him alive? Because he lost weight, and was becoming very ill. So I went up there and confronted them and got in her business. And she was terribly angry at me. One of the relatives I had gone to meet about what was going on with Dad, unfortunately, was for her in locking him up. I mean, this was a locked facility. I couldn't even go in to see him when I showed up to visit him unless it was a certain hour of the day. And I was livid. She had gone on vacation, and I went up there to find out what the hell was going on. They had beaten him. He had bruises on him. And granted, he was a little, you know, paranoid, but the FBI had been, you know, investigating him because of his work. And so when he became elderly, he got into that paranoia of remembering the FBI. And they just, you know, kind of, oh, he's making all this stuff up. And I'm going, this is really real in his brain.
And you know, what, Alma, you remind me of something in that regard.
Yeah.
This is so very real for you. Toward the end of his life, and granted, he committed suicide when he was 62. Ernest Hemingway was subjected to repeated rounds of electroshock therapy because, among other things, he had had a bunch of horrible head injuries, but also because he kept swearing up and down that the FBI were tailing him, were surveilling him, and were trying to ruin him. And it turned out, after he was long dead,
that was true.
It was all true.
It was true. Yeah.
And for someone who was involved as closely as your father was in the civil rights struggle, I mean, if you went to Selma with Dr. King, you were in it.
Exactly.
And no one should live under the misapprehension that J. Edgar Hoover's FBI wasn't doing everything in its power to ruin anybody who would stand with Dr. King. When you mentioned your father making the Presbyterians get off the fence, I was immediately reminded of a passage from Letter from Birmingham Jail. Dr. King wrote, "I must confess that over the past few years I've been gravely disappointed with the white moderate. I've almost reached the regrettable conclusion that the Negro's great stumbling block in his stride toward freedom is not the white citizen's counselor or the Ku Klux Klanner, but the white moderate, who is more devoted to order than to justice, who prefers a negative peace, which is the absence of tension, to a positive peace, which is the presence of justice, who constantly says,
I agree with you in the goal you seek, but I cannot agree with your methods of direct action. Who paternalistically believes he can set the timetable for another man's freedom, who lives by a mythical concept of time, and who constantly advises the Negro to wait for a more convenient season. It's exactly what your father was talking about, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so we have these intolerable stories, such as I related a little bit ago. And you're right, Alma, they're intolerable.
Oh, they're horrifying.
But...
And it's coming, but it's coming back.
That's the thing. We thought
they were
maybe...
allowing it.
Yeah, we thought maybe we were making progress against it.
Yeah.
And it has come roaring back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
And we have to ask ourselves the question, why? I mean, has it always been there and it was just masked for a little bit?
I think so.
Was it just pretense? Was there some sort of a tacit agreement to stay quiet and look, we gave them the Jeffersons and what about Family Matters and Steve Urkel? And okay, I remember when, who was it, John Boehner? Mm. No, it was Tony Snow.
Oh, yeah.
Said, the era of racism is over.
Yeah, right.
And see, that's so dangerous, Alma, because if you declare that racism is over, then any racist thing someone does, well, gosh, it's not racism anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's just economic insecurity.
I find that so funny when you say that. These people are racist. They're prejudiced. They're hateful. They're dangerous. I married a Hispanic man. I'm a white woman, and it was just a month or so ago that I realized why he kept picking on me when I would not put on a blinker, or I would turn left and get in the wrong lane first, wait, and then he'd get in the next lane. Because he was always afraid of being stopped.
Yeah, those can be terminal events for the wrong people in this country.
Exactly. We've been together 26 years, and it finally dawned on me that he wasn't ragging on me. He was doing that for his and our safety.
Absolutely.
Amazing. I am more accepted by his family than I was my own. My father, as a pastor, was controlling. We were so naive as four young daughters about what the world actually held out there when we were supposed to get out there. And we were pretty much, you know, all of us beaten down psychologically and spiritually and all of that by the way the world really worked. So we weren't prepared to get out there. And because, you know, as a pastor's daughter, you have to present yourself as little angels.
Absolutely. Or in the case of Southern Baptist pastor's daughters, or pastor's sons, as soon as everybody is not looking, little devils.
Well, I don't think that's little girls. But
well, growing up in Alabama, we just referred to them all generically as PK.
Yeah, I was a PK.
Yeah, preacher's kids, and they got it seemed to us like they got away with murder.
Yeah, that's probably pretty much the case. But I it's not Wednesday night church night, but I've really gotten befuddled in my life because I do believe that there's one God by many names. And this division among people is somehow, it's just not right with me, so I couldn't fit in their box. Well, I'm a smoker. That's not appropriate. I do drink. That's not appropriate. And so I just never felt comfortable. And I tried that lifestyle more than once, twice. And I just didn't fit. And so I feel kind of out there, but I know that I can't be this evangelical. My sisters are involved with family, the family, focus on the family, that family research council.
All
of those kind of things.
In other words, they're down the rabbit hole.
I think so, because I had a sister with the next oldest. I mean, I had a conversation with my sister after Dad died, and I, you know, we were talking about creationism, and I said, "Are you, you know, teaching your daughter creationism?" And she said to me, "Evolution is only a theory." And my jaw dropped. Like, who the hell have you become? I thought you were so intelligent. She became a doctor. I mean, she's a brainy woman. But it's just like, I have no bond with these two women that are left. My brother-in-law, my sister who died, he adored Glenn Beck. And he has a homosexual daughter. He is so homophobic. He's hateful. And I just, you know, it's like she's 23 now. And I wonder, she's never come out to anyone. But, you know, you could tell this is who she is. I tried to get her to talk to me, and she won't. But she lives with her father. And I don't see how she survives. I really, really
she's
don't.
She survives.
In hiding and in terror.
The closet is the most terrifying place in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. But I suppose I've lived in the closet for a long time because it's been so hard to stand up to my family and say, your faith, your religion, you can't stand there and say that there's only one way. You can't do that.
Well, it's not
moral.
Not only is it immoral, it won't withstand scrutiny, Alma.
Yeah, yeah.
I've listened
to you for a long time. Mike Malloy recommended you years ago, and I think I sent you an email saying, "Why is there only one person talking?" And you said, "Because you're conversation radio." And I didn't understand what that was until I kept listening to you. And I love your humor, I love your intelligence, I love your memory on historical things. I learned so much from your program.
Well, when I'm not screwing up submarine movies like I did last night, but thank you.
Well, thank you for what you do, and I hope your health is going to be okay.
Thank you. Right now, hoping is what we're all doing. Because it doesn't seem there's a whole lot more beyond that. And I wish I was kidding. But, we've corresponded back and forth, email for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this was not an easy call for you to make.
No.
And
but I'm okay. It's easier than you think.
Well, yeah, we haven't lost you yet. You haven't fainted over screaming or anything, despite the subject matter.
Yeah.
And I'm just so pleased and so honored that you did something that you deemed as difficult as this was. I mean, that's when any individual overcomes an essential fear, that's heroic. And I appreciate the contribution that you have made to the conversation tonight, because in the context of the larger scope of what we've been talking about, Alma, you have brought it down to a concrete reality.
Yeah.
A personal reality. And if you're saying it, I can guarantee you, Alma, that there is someone out there hearing you who is saying, "Really? Her too? You mean it's not just me?"
Exactly, exactly.
And that right there is the heart and soul of what we try to do in creating this little community.
Yeah. Well, I think, was it Sparky that had the challenge?
Yes, it was.
Well, thank you, Sparky.
Yes, thank you indeed to Sparky, and but thank you for picking up the gauntlet. And I hope that while this is the first conversation, that it will be by far from the last.
I hope so.
Because you brought an absolute boatload to the discussion this evening. You really, really did. I'll be thinking about what you said after the program's over. Because I'm funny way. I can't just walk away, go, all right, show's over, you know, let's...
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I will share one other thing. I still have spiritual crises because that superego is really strong about, you know, you've got to live the way that we live. Otherwise, you're not a part of this family. Even though Dad said those screwy things about, you know, religion, I ended up pretty screwed up. And I've looked into Buddhism, and I've tried to do comparative religions and, you know, understand where the people are coming from. And the other day I was talking to a gal, and I said, I just can't pick. And she said, why do you need to choose? And here I am coming on 60 this year, and I'm still trying to choose. And she says, you don't have to choose.
You absolutely
which
don't.
Religion and there is.
I have a benchmark standard. And while I am critical of various and sundry faiths and various and sundry, not so much faiths, but behaviors, mm-hmm. you know, if you can have your faith and practice it and get something resembling peace or happiness out of it, good for you. And I don't mean you. But in the broader sense.
Exactly. You know, people have to determine
I'm sorry, not to talk over.
That's okay.
But if your faith and your happiness is dependent on being vicious, on being cruel, on being judgmental to some other group that you have decided is an offense to your idea of a deity, well, then, you know, the hell with you. I mean, that's...
I wish I'd have said that early on in my life.
And people who were not raised in religion don't necessarily understand this.
Well, I think they're very lucky.
Yes, they are. They are among the most fortunate among us because they just live in a real rational world that isn't haunted by demons or spooks or ghosties or goblins. But
that's one of my points. I go by reason. I don't feel like I have any faith at all. Because I don't know what to have faith in.
Well, maybe that's because there's nothing identifiable out there for you.
Maybe so.
But people who were not raised in religious surroundings, and, you know, we can't necessarily blame our parents.
Yeah.
I mean...
They did the best they could.
I'm sure my mom smoked like a chimney while she was carrying me back in 1962.
Hmm.
Nobody had told her. In fact, they were actively telling people back then that smoking was good. You know, nine out of ten obstetricians who smoke Terrytons.
It's good for your health. What it didn't you do you any harm?
and so it's hard to lay it off on mom and dad when they do something arguably more dangerous, and that is to play with the pliable, pliant mind.
The minds. Exactly.
Of a child.
Yeah.
I trust there's no little ones listening at this hour. I hope there aren't. But we don't have a problem, and I'm speaking to the Christian tradition, of course.
Uh-huh.
We don't have a problem eventually kind of confirming things when children figure out for themselves that mom and dad are Santa Claus and grandma and grandpa are Santa Claus and aunt and uncle are Santa Claus. And if we have to, we'll say, well, yeah, but it's the, you know, it's the spirit of the giving that is the reality of old Saint Nick or some sort of pablum like that.
Right.
But we cannot, at the same time, we're sending them off to Sunday school to be dipped by the heel in some of the most vicious, hate-filled, religious dogma known to the mind of humanity. And yeah. and the extra double D dose of wicked in it is that we start kids off down there in the basement of the Baptist church with the sweet little blue-haired ladies, and you sing, Jesus loves the little children, okay? And you give them that, and then eventually they get up, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, they move to the next Sunday school group, and eventually they're up in the teenagers class, and they're being told all about how they'll burn in hell if they're gay.
Oh my God.
And at the same time, you've already established the reality of hell.
Yeah.
You've established the reality of heaven. You've established the ability of this deity to mete out some of the most sadistic punishments known to the imagination of humanity. And so an Alma or a Bob or any number of other people, even if we reject that, go through life scarred by that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, that's why I tell people I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. Or I tell them I'm a Zen Baptist.
Yeah.
And we believe that your soul's like a Frisbee, and when you die, it goes up on the roof and you can't get it down. That's a Frisbee-tyrian.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't... Maybe it's too facile entirely for me to say this to you, Alma, but please don't beat yourself up.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's very, 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 very difficult. It truly is, and I just, it's like, it's one of the curses in my life. I feel.
But at least understand where it's coming from, and understand that it's something that's sort of beyond your control. It's a pity that there's not an AA for lapsed believers or apostates or whatever word they come up with to describe us, because we all need a sponsor.
Yeah,
and we need to be able to call up and go, ah, you know, I'm thinking about reading the Bible. Don't, okay.
And I think that's what you provide for people. Just somebody to talk to.
Or if somebody calls up and says, yeah, I'm thinking about reading the Bible, you go, okay, let's do it. And you open the Bible to the Old Testament where Lot's daughters get him liquored up and then rape him.
Yeah.
Feeling any more sacred yet?
Yeah. Well, it would be okay if people just didn't try to push their stuff on you. You know?
Well, it was a long time ago when George Carlin said, religion is like a lift in your shoes. It may be great for you, and it may help you get through the day, but he would always follow up and say, let's not go around nailing heels on the natives.
Yeah.
And right now, I mentioned it a couple of times. Right now, Agnes and I are watching a Netflix series called Juana Inés.
Mm-hmm.
And we were joking last night. I'm afraid by the end of the program, it's going to be like that VW Passat commercial where the guy's getting their Passat that doesn't have to be filled. It's diesel, so it doesn't have to be filled up for 800 miles. And they, instead of listening to music, they listen to a Spanish language learning disc. And they wind up at the Mexican border arguing football with each other in Spanish. I'm listening to the Spanish in this and watching the subtitles and picking out words here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe by the time this is over with, I'm going to be semi-fluent in 17th century Castilian Spanish. That's going to be so great down at the Tienda Mexicana when I go to buy beans.
Yeah.
You know, with all the rrs and the V's that are B's and the B's that are V's.
Right, right. Well, it's a beautiful language.
Well, it is, but it's a far cry from what it is now. So, but more to the point, you get in at least I'm getting in watching this, what a nightmare it was
when the Spaniards, at the point of a sword, and the spark of a flame, imposed Catholicism on a people who were already perfectly moral. And all the guilt and everything gets overlaid. Agnes and I have these conversations, and it got to the point where I looked up the Nahuatl English translation of the Nican Mopoa, which is the Nahuatl poem.
Oh yeah.
Appearance of La Virgen de Guadalupe, mm-hmm. and we just because all of a sudden in one of the scenes, at the risk of their immortal souls, an indigenous healer is called in, and she begins to invoke Tonantzin. And my pink little ears perked up and went, well, that ain't Spanish. That's Nahuatl. And I know what it means. anywhere Western religion has gone.
Oh, gosh.
It's
gotten perverted.
But it's left a trail of death and disease and destruction.
Yeah.
And exactly. if Christianity became pure as the driven snow for the next 10,000 years, it would still be making up for the evil that it has wrought in the last 2,000.
Oh, my God. It's the trying to control the masses. It's so awful. You know, my husband said that people make God in their own image.
Yeah. They absolutely do, and it's like that bumper sticker I saw one time. We got to get out of here, but if your God hates all the same things you do, chances are he's imaginary.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about getting that tattooed. Alma, thank you so much for a lovely conversation. Thank you for being so brave as to make it. And like I said, I hope it will not be our last.
Yes, thank you. I needed the uplift.
I'm glad I was able to provide it. You have a lovely evening.
And you do the same.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Brand new caller, first-time caller, Alma, to close out this particular Titanic Tuesday, which has been, at least in my book, a humdinger. So thanks, everybody. We will finish the program with... $10, thank you, David. $10 to go in Aces Challenge, just $10, and that will leave us with I think $115 to go to wipe out tonight and not have an overage tomorrow. So the early is $315. So thanks, everybody, for keeping this program on the air. Thanks for your participation in all the myriad ways in which you do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.